Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
An Oireachtas committee has recommended the decriminalisation of possession of all drugs for personal use. To discuss this, I'm joined by Professor Colin O'Gara, addiction psychiatrist at St John of God's Hospital and clinical professor of psychiatry at UCD. Professor, you're very welcome to the programme. I know you and many other clinicians and many other people who've worked within this field have recommended this health-led approach for some time. But can you just explain to people this morning what the difference is between the decriminalisation of drugs for personal use and the legalization of drugs for personal use?
Yeah, good morning, Ciara. Essentially, decriminalization takes away the idea that if you suffer from an addiction primarily, that you're going to be treated as a criminal. So up to this point, if you were caught in possession of drugs, you would go down a criminal route. The proposal here from the committee is that you would be put into a health system as opposed to a criminal system. So that is a huge change, and it's a huge change in terms of stigma. A lot of our patients, Ciara, who attend here to see me, for instance, in the outpatient setting, do not want to come into hospital because of the stigma. We've got a massive issue in terms of access to services. Some of the figures, for instance, are that only 1 in 10 people with the more rare forms of addiction will actually attend for treatment because of stigma. So one of the key issues in terms of driving stigma is saying to a person when they're at their lowest ebb, in addition to being an addict, you're also a criminal. And I think that has to stop.
What about those people who take drugs and never end up in front of you or never have to access addiction services? What does a health-led approach mean for them and look like for them?
Yeah. So for some people, Ciara, they will use drugs in a hedonistic fashion, meaning they will go out, they will take drugs, and they will go back to work on a Monday morning. The estimates for, say, ecstasy, cocaine, stimulants, probably 1.5 million people. You know, 20 years ago, we used to use the figure of 1 million people in the UK, 1.5 million people in the UK using these drugs, some of whom will go to work on a Monday morning as if nothing happened. My experience is that people take drugs for a whole host of reasons. They take drugs because they're lonely. They take drugs because they were bullied in school. They take drugs because they were traumatized, be it physical, emotional, or sexual abuse. And they really, on one level, would not want to be taking drugs. So if you put these people into a health system, some, not all, of course, but some will benefit from that. You will have a cohort of people as well who will take drugs, go through the health system and get off and won't be criminalized, of course. But I think the big picture here is that we have to move towards supporting people who are using drugs and who can be helped.
I'm just wondering, though, what that approach in real practical terms looks like. Let's say you're at a festival, you are found using cocaine. This health-led approach is what's adopted and recommended for you. What do you do? What happens?
Well, the international model is that you would be in front of what's called a dissuasion committee. So you would essentially enter, instead of going down the route of a court appearance, you would be engaging with a committee, some of whom will be health professionals, and you'll be offered the opportunity to engage in treatment of some sort. So now, obviously, if you don't want to engage in that treatment, that would be, you know, that's not going to be useful. But again, it comes back to, you know, this idea that really when people are using, you know, are you going to give somebody a criminal record, for instance, for the future? They're not going to be able to travel because they have been using drugs at this particular time. I think, you know, often I do see people in that situation. And I think that's pretty futile, actually. So I think we need to look at other mechanisms. And that's just at one end of it. At the end that I deal with, which is the addiction piece, it's absolutely clear that we cannot continue to treat people in the way that we have, in criminalizing them, when really what they need is support.
I'm going to bring in Mary Fitzpatrick. She's a Fianna Fáil senator who was also deputy chair of the committee, and she joins me on the line now. Mary, what was the most compelling evidence for you that persuaded the committee to recommend decriminalisation of all drugs for personal use?
I suppose it was the human lived experience of families of people who had either lost their lives or had suffered greatly through addiction and drug use. The families and the supporters, and I suppose also the youth workers and the teachers and the school's representatives, all of whom spoke of, I suppose, what was, you know, the real impacts of substance use, substance misuse, addiction, all of the, you know, mental health issues, all of the social implications, the economic implications, you know, obviously. But I suppose all of that, and what was really, really evident, was that we can't police our way out of those problems. They are health problems. We need a public health, you know, response. We need a comprehensive health-led response. We need to recognise that, you know, drugs use and abuse and misuse in Ireland has really evolved over the last, what, 20, 30 years. You know, historically it was, you know, primarily opioid based in marginalized communities. Well, now it's polysubstance use, you know, it's population wide polysubstance use in every community. So, you know, we need to invest very, very heavily in prevention, in supporting young people, in understanding what their challenges are and supporting them to make better decisions, to have more informed decisions, to have more confidence, have more resilience and better coping mechanisms, so that, you know, as is described, like drug use is a symptom. It's a symptom of other pain. So we need to support and prevent and invest in that. And there is some great work already being done in by youth services, by teachers, by schools, by parents, by communities. The GAA have taken, you know, strong initiatives. But I suppose what we as a committee concluded is that while, yes, there are some really strong and positive and impactful initiatives, there isn't a universal approach across the country. There isn't a universal approach across society. To achieve that, we need to achieve a public health response. So
let me bring in Colin McGarrett on to that, because we will have spoken in the past, Colin, about the demand on services in this country. And I'm wondering if we're going to take this health-led approach. Are we in any way set up to deal with that? Are there massive gaps that we would need to address, first of all, to ensure that we can adequately treat this as a health-based problem as opposed to a criminal one?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, Ciara. I mean, the key issue here is, I mean, the committee has come up with some excellent suggestions. It's wide-ranging. It's very well-informed. It's evidence-based. Now, the next piece is, how do you implement that? And there is a long-term history of diversion of resources away from mental health and addiction services. A Vision for Change 2006 would have highlighted the diversion away from mental health services of key resources to the rest of medicine. This really, I agree with Mary, it's a public health issue, but it also strikes at the heart of, is mental health and addiction on par with the rest of medicine? And therefore, you know, is it going to be funded accordingly? But really, the signals coming from a lot of the literature internationally in terms of the implementation of decriminalization is one, you know, society needs to be ready for that, but particularly governments need to be ready for it and services on the ground need to be ready for it. If you change the attendance and the engagement from 1 in 10 individual with an addiction or a severe rare addiction to 3 or 4 attending, all of a sudden you have a strain on existing services. And we know, Mary referred there to opioid services, we know that some opioid services across the country have long waiting lists, for instance, for counselling. So if we're going to implement this harm reduction approach and this health-led approach, how exactly are we going to fund it? And this comes back every time to the same thing in a space where there's so many competing and very worthy interests in medicine.
Mary, to bring you in there, we're currently, incapable of delivering this health-led approach.
Well, we're delivering in a patchy, inconsistent way. I completely agree, and I agree with what has been said. If we were to decriminalise without putting in place the prevention measures, without putting in place a comprehensive health-led approach, it would be disastrous. But that's not what the committee is proposing. There's 161 recommendations. They're wide-ranging, they're comprehensive, and they deal with everything, but primarily focusing on what needs to be done to ensure that we do have adequate prevention so that we avoid and reduce harm in the first instance, that we have treatment available, that we support individuals and communities. But as I say, there's 161 recommendations. The decriminalisation is only one. And if it was to happen in isolation without the rest, it would be a disaster. And nobody is proposing that. That wasn't the committee's proposal. And what will happen now is that this report has been launched by the Oireachtas. It now goes to the Dáil and to the Seanad. There will be debates there. In parallel to this, the minister, Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, is developing a new drug strategy. And the minister has engaged very significantly with the committee and has actually held off publishing her drug strategy.
And do you think she will be accepting of the findings of this committee? Is that the direction of travel here?
I absolutely believe the minister. I haven't spoken to her since the report has been launched, so I can't say for 161 of the recommendations that, yes, I can't speak for her on that. But what I do know for certain is that the minister absolutely appreciates the need for a comprehensive public health-led response to our drugs and addiction crisis. And the minister has engaged and is engaging not just with the committee, but with all of the stakeholders. She's been very hands-on on this because she understands that every community in the country is being affected and that families and individuals all over the country are being affected. And
but
so
there's real fears,
committed.
Though, within those communities, and I'm seeing those texts coming in this morning, that we will have this decriminalisation and we will not put the resources in to support that. And the committee did note that in a small sample of the jurisdictions where there is decriminalisation and where it was implemented, there was an increase in drug consumption in public areas.
Yeah, and the committee called that out, actually. We called it out in our report because we share that concern. I mean, I live in Dublin City. I don't think I pass a day through the city that I don't see young people's lives being destroyed through being engaged in drug dealing, drug use, drug distribution. It's heartbreaking, it's alarming, and it's unacceptable.
So they have to go in tandem, don't they? Because people will be worried that the decriminalisation comes first and then the years and years spent advocating for further resources to go into this system.
That would be, as I say, disastrous. That just wouldn't work. And I don't think any responsible, reasonable government would oversee such a move. It just, you know, would defy any logic or reasonable behaviour. I absolutely believe that in calling for a comprehensive health-led response to our drugs and addiction problem, what we're saying is that we're putting the priority on health, on public health. We're saying we have to address it as a health issue ever before the criminal issues are. It is absolutely, you know, about being clear, drug users are separate to drug dealers, drug distributors, drug sellers. It is about pursuing drug dealers, drug sellers, drug traders, you know, aggressively and prosecuting them from a criminal justice perspective. But people who are in the throes of addiction, criminalising them only adds to the damage.
All right. Mary Fitzpatrick, Fianna Fáil Senator and Professor Colin O'Gara, thank you for joining me on that lot.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.